Welcome, welcome, welcome everyone to the American Overlander podcast. I'm your host, Will Fowler, and today we are picking up the conversation where we left it last time with Rob from Revere Overland and Chris from Frontier State Overland talking about our trip on the Idaho BDR last summer, and this is the final episode and final kind of remembrance of that trip. So I think it's going to be really, really fun as we get closer to the end. A lot of really interesting things happened. Now, where we left it last time was Rob and I discussing how historians tracked Lewis and Clark on the Lolo Motorway, finding their campsites by finding the mercury that was left behind in people's poo, which is kind of ridiculous. But today we're picking up the conversation kind of right where we left it, talking about the Lolo Motorway in our path through that, and then bringing it all the way home to the Canadian border. So I really hope you enjoy.
So it is cool though, because this is a stretch. I can't imagine doing it back then when they had horses and canoes and they had no idea where they were going, and they super rugged terrain, like very rugged terrain.
Yeah.
For us,
it would take them like 7 days or something to do the part that took us
10 days.
A day. 10 days.
Yeah. So they were going like 10 miles a day or something like that. And it took us, basically a day.
Because it's about 100 miles, right? It's like 104 or something, just over. Yeah.
And we did 15 or 16 in the night, and then we did the rest during the day. But I remember getting into this like rhythm of like tree, 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 tree.
Yeah, the later half of it.
It was like so bad, man. And we were so tired because we got – so not only is it like – so there's there was probably 600 trees down, and they had almost all been cut. There was only a couple that we had to freshly cut. But some of them hadn't been cut wide enough. And I don't know how many times we get out. It's not like we were doing the Alexander Mackenzie Trail. It's not like we, cut 100 trees on our own.
Right.
But we got out a lot. But when we weren't getting out, you still had to kind of white knuckle it, because there was, for every one that you got out and cut, there were 50 that you just barely squeaked by.
Yeah.
And so it would require like a lot of focus and a lot of,
I think we probably only cut maybe 5.
Yeah.
But it was just, you'd get up to speed and then you see the next set of fallen trees. And in the tundra, I had maybe 3 inches on either side of me.
Yeah.
Which is, that sounds like a lot of clearance, but you have to slow down to a crawl to make sure you're going to fit through that. And it was every time you got up to speed, that was the next set of trees.
Yeah, 3 inches is so like in a rig of any size, that is a very small margin of error. To like do something that could cost you $1,000 to fix, or even worse, out there, like something happens and you need a repair and you have to like hop in somebody else's rig and go get parts or something. So we're driving through Lolo, we cut some trees, we're dodging trees. And again, this to me was the longest day besides the very last day, because we came up to this fire lookout, which we didn't film. And I remember we pulled up to this fire lookout, which is kind of at the end of Lolo.
And yeah, you were right at the end there.
You were like, "Telly ho!" And like, there was somebody up there, and he was like, "Telly ho!" And he came out, and he was, these guys they're not super social because they're fire lookout
people. Some of them are really, really cool. Like, one of my Pacific Crest trails, super, like, invited me up, showed me all the tools, explained how they use the maps. Like, really, really interesting guy. The one at this fire tower was obviously one of those people that goes there to get away from people. Yeah. I had talked to him the year before. I remember this guy. I talked to him the last time I was there. So I said to him, he called up to him, like, "I talked to you last year." And he's like, "Okay."
We were like, "Hey." And he was like, "Hello." Then we were like, "Cool. You're at the fire lookout." And he was like, "Yes." And you're like, "I think I talked to you last year." And he was like, "Okay." And we're like, "Bye."
Just awkwardly. "Okay, well, we're leaving now."
"Okay, we'll let you get back to your chess or whatever." So it's, again, it's late at this point. We drive into Elk City, Pierce, Idaho. So we finally make it into pavement, get into Pierce, Idaho. Pierce is actually, the history of Pierce is interesting. It's like one of the first places that started Idaho. So they, Pierce is kind of where they found gold initially in Idaho, and then it kind of spread to other places. But Pierce is a super.
Orofino.
Yeah. Pierce and Orofino.
Doesn't that mean gold? Finding gold or something?
Yeah. That's the area where they started finding gold. And as you get farther north, it's like it's the place where they extracted more silver from the earth than any other place in the U.S. Like more than Colorado mines and all that. It all was in Idaho, oddly. But what I remember about Pierce, two things. We pulled in for gas. And as we were pulling in, we were so tired. It was so hot. And we just wanted to get gas and find a camp spot. And I remember this guy pulled up and he was like, "Holy cow, that's Revere Overland." and he was super nice. Like he was awesome. But I remember looking over at you and I remember just thinking like, oh, Rob is like, I know he doesn't want to talk to anybody right now. But like, of course, like you're super, it was turned out to be a really great conversation.
Oh yeah. He's a really nice guy.
Here we are in Pierce, Idaho.
A town of like 30 people.
Yeah. And we're like, there's our three rigs in this gas station. Probably the first three rigs that had come into that gas station in the last 2 hours. And it just so happened that one other flatbed truck was there. And this guy was a fan of Revere Overland, which is really cool. And so that's the first thing I remember. And then the second thing I remember is I went in to pay. And I think I forgot my credit card in my Jeep. And the lady in the gas station, I was like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. I forgot my credit card. Just give me a second. I'll be right back. And she goes, "Just don't make me come out there and effing chase you down." And I was like, oh my God, who gets gas from here that you would have to say that? Like, what has happened to you that you would have to say that? Yeah. So rough and tough. Town of Pierce, and then the day got worse.
Yes.
So then we got to this fork in the road. We were still on paved roads at this point, and there's this big sign that said "Granddad closed," and what that meant was, I don't even know what that meant, but part of the route was closed for construction or something like that. And it's now it's like I think it's 7:30 maybe.
Yeah, I think it was for logging. That area around there is tons of logging going on, so I think they shut down the road for logging.
Okay.
So it's the main road to the reservoir.
And that area is really interesting because the route that we did drive, so we did a detour. You were like, I don't care about the BDR. I'm not driving the BDR. Repeat. I remember you're on the radio. You're like, repeat. I am not driving on the BDR right now.
Yeah, because it was one of those things where, you know how sometimes people create these routes and there'll be a section of paved road and then they'll make like a little loop that's half a mile on unpaved road. There's like three of those along this. It's like, well, what's the point in going off for half a mile or a mile of unpaved roads when I can just get there on this paved road?
And we're already on a detour. Like it's already been ruined. Like staying on the route was kind of a moot point at that point in the trip. And so we did eventually turn off onto dirt and the road. I remember driving by these areas that had been logged and just seeing basically like this, it looked like a rototiller had come through the earth and it doesn't look nice at all after like the remains of logging looks really kind of gross. But we drove through these logging roads and we came out and we saw the smoke rising. I think it was 5 or 6 miles away from us and it was a new fire. And so it made me think of the conversations that you and I had before we started. Cause you're like, I've tried this three times.
Like yeah, this is the third time.
Fire. And here we are like, you know, we're in the last third at this point of the BDR. And there's new smoke rising. And I just like the pit of my stomach just dropped because I was like, oh crap, we're going to get fired out of this thing. Because they were so close to us. Who knows? Those fires can move.
Oh, they can. And, yeah. They spread fast. Turns out this one didn't.
Luckily. But we didn't know. Like at the time we were like, well, crap, maybe this is the end of the trip. And so we drove, we kind of like gingerly drove watching the smoke down to this boat launch. This was not the worst campsite we stayed in the whole trip. I think Deadwood's the worst. In my opinion, is Deadwood's worst.
I agree, but I did think it was going to be the worst as we pulled down.
Yes, same. We pulled down to this campsite, and it was a boat launch. I mean, I don't know what the right metaphor is, but it's like you're on the BDR, you're on the backcountry discovery route, you're discovering the backcountry of Idaho, and you pull up to a campsite, and it has 20 other people camping in it, all in just basically a big parking lot.
Campers.
It's basically a big dirt lot that had about 20 people. Like you said, Rob, RVs, camp trailers. Nobody's tent camping, I don't think.
No.
And we were, I was like, oh God. I remember thinking, is there a way out of this? and finally we were like, oh, you know what? It's flat. It's level. Let's just camp. Let's just do it.
Yeah. I don't know where else we would have gone. Because that's part of the route I have done before. And I couldn't remember any other camping within 10 miles.
Not even, dude. I remember the next day we drove out, right? And it was like, there was no camping for a long time. There's no camping spots for a long, long time. Dorshak Reservoir is a beautiful place. I really want to go back and see it properly.
I'd like to go back and get some drone footage there.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. So we didn't fly the drones because of the fire, which was number one, legally, it's the right thing to do. Number two, like ethically, it's the right thing to do because you don't want to disturb their fire.
I think legally we could have, because I think we were just outside of the zone. Like, I think it's like a 5 mile exclusion zone they put around these fires. But you're right. Ethically, we were what, 7 miles away, and they're using the reservoir to put this fire out. You know, these helicopters are flying down to the water, collecting water from the reservoir and taking it back up. And there are plenty of times where a drone has been spotted while these people are fighting the fires, and they'll ground the aircraft. And actually, the Dixie fire in California, I think maybe one of the biggest, or it was the biggest at the time, fire, they had almost contained it, and then they spotted the drone and had to stop fighting it.
Yep.
So I was not about to be responsible for that.
Well, and I'm glad we put that on camera too. I don't know. I can't remember if you did, but I know that I actually said that out loud on camera. I think you did too. Like, we're not flying drones right now because we're too close to the fire. And I think people need to hear that, because even though we could have, it was obviously the wrong thing to do. And we'll just go back when there's not a fire and get it. But here's the thing about that campsite, and Chris can back me up on this, is that the people that were camping there were not like people that I'm used to in a camp spot like that.
Oh yeah.
Like they were quiet. They were keeping to themselves. They were really pleasant, kind. It was actually really cool to experience that, because I'd never experienced it before. My first camping experience like that was Chris, on our first overlanding trip, when we stayed at Deadwood. We were staying at a campground on the side of the lake, and this Yahoo pulls up in his trailer like 20 yards from us and starts blasting country music because he's got outdoor speakers on his trailer. So that's what I expected. And that we got the opposite, like really polite, kind people. So then the next morning, that night we had ribs again on the Otzi grill.
Yeah. The really fatty ones. Good. Yeah. I didn't eat those ones.
You opted out. You're like, ribs, I love those last ribs. Let's have those. And you took one bite and you're like, now I'm making a burger. So then the next morning we get up, have some coffee, and we hit the road. We cross this really great bridge, but it's not as good as the other Dorshak bridge. There's another Dorshak bridge that's a suspension bridge. It's really, really beautiful that we'll have to go back and see. But this one is still beautiful.
Yeah, it is. And that's one that the last time I'd gone there, I flew the drone as we were driving across it. It was just an incredible shot, like just looking down the reservoir. So I think we need to go back anyway just to get that drone shot.
Okay. Yeah. you just twisted my arm. So we get across the bridge, we get up the road, the next road, about, I don't know, maybe 2 or 3 miles, and I can't find my drone. So this is like not a good drone trip for me. My mini, so I have two drones. I have my Mavic 3, and then I have my Mavic Mini Pro 3, or Mini 3 Pro, whatever. And I couldn't find it anywhere because I was about to throw it up to do some stuff. And I pulled over, I looked all through my rig and I was like, crap, I must have left it on the table or something at the campsite. So I was like, guys, I'm sorry, I got to go back. And so you guys were very gracious, but I beelined back to this campsite and I'm looking like in vain. I'm looking around for this drone and the campers all come over to me. There's like 10 people who come over to me and they're like, what's going on? Are you okay? And I was like, yes, I just lost my drone. And they're like, okay, what does it look like? And I was like, it's like this, I don't know, it's like a little drone. And they're like, okay. And they all started looking everywhere. And one guy was like, one grandpa dude was like, oh, is this it? And I was like, yes, where did you find that? It was on my snorkel. I had put it between the snorkel and the hood and it had been riding there the whole time. And thank God. I mean, I wound up losing it later, but like, thank
God. I was going to say, I'm amazed it didn't break.
I did some hugging. I did do some hugging before I came back to you guys. I did some hugging of the people and they were like, go get them, son.
I didn't remember how frantic you were because you had torn the inside because we pulled over to the side of this road. Yeah. And you had torn the inside of your Jeep apart while we were waiting on the side of the road looking for this drone.
Yeah, I was really frantic. And
with it,
I was
probably 3 feet from you the entire time.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, I caught up to you guys. Then we get into this stretch of the BDR, which I think was really cool. Like, this is another just super memorable stretch for me because we climbed up the side of these hills and we're kind of in a little bit lower elevation mountains now, but every now and then we'll come across a clearing and we'll see these vistas, and the horizon and the vistas are different in northern Idaho than they are in southern Idaho because there's more moisture in the air. And so it's like bluer, like you see kind of layers of blue and green in different ways than you do other places. And it was so beautiful. And the road itself was not hard. It wasn't a hard road, but it was a little rough, some washouts, some whoops and things. And we get into this stretch, of forest where you had to turn back. I remember hearing you describe this on the radio and I didn't on my video, I included a lot of it, but we were like having these conversations on the radio about like, you're like, oh, I remember that tree. Oh yes. Yeah. We winched that tree and you were like, it was actually really spooky too, because it was super misty. It was really dark. And you're describing, you know, this scenario. And when we were driving through, it was like really beautiful.
It was.
And green and
totally different. Nice.
Yeah.
And there was it's no amazing. Because that's the spot that we had been worried about leading up to this trip. Yeah. You know, we had been looking at the snow depth maps and it persisted there well into the first week of July, which was right before we were heading up there. And I think that's about when, you know, right, because this was right after Overland Expo Pacific Northwest, and I think that's right when that heat wave hit. Was what was it, like July 7th?
That's when we left. Like, it like melted as we were driving to it.
Yeah, like every day we checked there was less and less snow there, and it was just a completely different experience. You know, we were there, well, what do you think, we're around July 13th we did that.
I was gonna say 15th, somewhere in there. Yeah.
Which is only 2 weeks earlier, sorry, 2 weeks later than I had been there two years prior. And the time I'd been there 2 years prior, the snow was too deep for us to make it through. You know, you're looking like knee deep snow and just completely frozen over, completely impossible. So it's amazing the difference. And for me, doing that section just brought back so many memories of how long we struggled. Because I think we spent about 6 hours and maybe traveled 3 miles trying to make our way through there. And we'd see these trees. Yeah, it was such a slog. But I'd see these trees like 2 years ago. I cut that tree down and pulled it off to the side of the trail. Like, I recognized that tree. I remember cutting that one, winching it. It's just again and again all the way through. Like, this is where we finally gave up and camped in the middle of the road, in the middle of this trail, because we could, because we knew no one else was going to be coming through that night.
Yeah, that I remember watching that video and being like, where is he right now? Like, it looked awful. And it did not look like it was July.
Yeah. And then just when we went through a completely different experience, you know, we went through, it took us 2.5 hours or something to do the entire section.
Yeah. Yeah. We did stop. We stopped for the one patch of snow.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And you got your wish.com traction boards out.
I did. Yeah. Actually, I think those are actually a different set. So I originally bought those wish.com ones. And I remember we talked about them in a previous previous podcast we did. And I used those on the Pacific Crest Trail. But Max Trax have actually launched their own version. So these ones that I had were Max Trax official ones.
Wow.
Still, like 4 inches long.
Yeah, they just cost three times as much.
So, yeah. They got me out. They got me through this one little patch of snow. Yeah.
I remember that. That was
but
like
you also
so
had some issues there, didn't you?
I did, yeah. So that's actually the first thing. The first time I noticed anything was you said something to me. We were coming up to this snow patch, and you were like, your Jeep, you said something like, your Jeep's making squeaky Jeep sounds. And I was like, yeah, it's squeaky. It's a Jeep. Yeah. And then I was like, wait, I should listen to it. And then it was like, like it was not a good squeaky sound. And it started making this, I don't know how to explain it. If you've ever had a drive shaft go out, if you've ever had a Rezepa joint go out, you probably know this sound. It sounds kind of like rocks or something that are spindling around.
Sounds like rocks.
Rocks on a very small washing machine.
Rocks typically don't make a lot of noise.
rocks being spun around in something metal and like this loose kind of grinding. I don't know. In any case, and really squeaky. And so I just was hoping. I was doing that thing where like, oh, maybe it'll just get better.
Yeah, just turn the radio off and it goes away.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We started driving. We were driving down into Avery, and it at that point I was still kind of, I would say, fully in denial. I just kept driving it normally. And we drove into Avery. We met up with Jake, and after we met up with Jake, we were driving slowly to find our next campsite, and it was getting really bad. And that's when I knew, like, oh shoot, this is going to be a problem. And we were all trying to brainstorm a little bit on the radio, like what it could be. And I was really hoping that it wasn't the drive shaft. But I think you two were.
Yeah. Both of us knew it was the drive shaft.
Yeah. Yeah.
Chris and I knew.
Yeah. 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 You guys were saying nice things. Like, I remember Rob, at one point you were like, well, look, if it is the drive shaft, I've driven with a busted U-joint. It's fine. You know, like you guys were trying to be encouraging. And I was like, I don't know. Maybe it's just dirty. I was really, that's honestly one of the scenarios in my head. Is like, maybe it's just got really dirty. So we get into Avery. And by the way, Avery to me was like a godsend. We were so dirty and dusty from the trail. We pull into Avery and there's this little like sandwich ice cream fly fishing
Yeah.
on the St. Joe River.
It's a really cool town in general. What town? It's a cluster of houses.
Yeah, a stop, yeah. But like the St. Joe River it's like something out of Montana that you'd see in like a river runs through it or something. It's just this really wide, shallow, beautiful river. And I remember I pulled into this place we were going to get lunch at, and I didn't even go inside. I just took my shoes off and walked directly into the river. Like there was this little kind of like ramp, like grass ramp that you could walk right into the river. And I just walked right into the river and just like washed, like rinsed my face off. And it was one of those moments when there's these moments when like you're dirty on the trail and you rinse off and it feels like you're a new person.
I stopped off at the restrooms in the visitor center and I felt like a new person afterwards.
That's right. Yeah. You joined us there a little bit later. So we got like a sandwich and ice cream and sat out in the shade by the river and had lunch. And then we went about finding a campsite. And so we camped on the St. Joe or like the South Fork or something of the St. Joe. And there, so in this part of Idaho, it's super driven by the lumber industry. So it's got a big lumber pass, mining pass, a railroad pass. So back in the 1800s and 1900s, they had built can't remember which railroad it was, but a
Milwaukee.
railroad, the Milwaukee. Okay, so, and these railroads, so they built tunnels, and there's, you know, the what they wanted to do was they wanted to leverage all the lumber. They wanted to cut the lumber and make a, you know, make a bunch of money and have a way to get the lumber out of this part of the country. But Teddy Roosevelt and what's his name? Gifford Pinchot, they started declaring all of these federal public lands that wouldn't allow cutting. And so there was this big tension between like the lumber industry and the federal government. And in that time, like these railroads are actually what started the Great Fire of 1910, known, also known as like the Big Burn. But we're staying out there. You can see why they wanted to harvest this lumber, because it's so densely forested, and there are just beautiful, massive trees everywhere. And it's also like very known. So there's these beautiful kind of railways and roadways, and then below are these rivers, the St. Joe and some tributaries of it. And there's camping like all along the river. And I remember we went and we looked at a campsite, and I was like, I just can't camp in another crappy camping site. Like I can't do it. I gotta find something better. And we drove, I don't know how long we drove, maybe 5 miles or something down the road.
It's funny because I like when I've gone through there before, it has not been nearly that busy. So that spot that I had marked always looked super appealing. And then when I went down there and there's all these people driving past, it's like it totally changed.
The only thing that made it so that we didn't want to stay there was all these folks and their side-by-sides and ATVs and motorcycles were just cruising up and down this road. But just on the other side of the road was the river, and then you had this amazing railroad trestle. And so it would have been great, except that it was kind of this magnet that just kind of drew people in.
Well, and there was another spot, I think, that was that you had also marked, that was like your A spot, and this was the B spot. Your A spot was actually on the river, but that was clearly taken.
Oh,
And
yeah.
this was just off the river, like across the road from the river. So we drove down, I don't know, maybe 5 miles, and found I think it was a pretty good campsite.
I
Although
like it.
It did have some weird things to it that we like didn't I didn't talk about in my videos. Like I'm pretty sure that I camped right next to like somebody's it's like somebody buried their pet out there
Oh,
or something.
wow. I'm glad I didn't know
So
that.
I didn't say anything at the time because I was just didn't want to ruin it. So there's, you know, it wasn't perfect, but it was on the river, and it was relatively secluded. It was kind of on the road, but it was at the end of the road, so we didn't really have anybody drive by. Although we had a motocross guy pull in who had gotten lost. I don't know if you remember this. I can't remember if it
Yeah,
was
I
that
do.
night or the next morning. And he was really nice, but he had gotten lost out there. And so we pulled out our guy a GPS and helped him kind of route his way back. I liked the campsite that we ended up at. Like that was a fun night. We had like I remember Jake, so we hooked up with Jake. Jake made dinner that night that I thought was really good. Like some
Got to
weird
see the Gandalf version of Rob.
That's right. So Rob, that's right. Yeah, so Rob, you were doing a gear video. Like we were both shooting videos that night. We were trying to do this the whole trip. We were like, let's get into camp early. We'll film these videos. And like we just never got into camp early. And so this was one of the nights where like we have to film stuff. So you filmed something about
Yeah, top
a gear
five
video.
favorite pieces of gear or something like that. Yeah. Which
And
one of
your
them happened to
Devos.
be the Devo Slight Ranger, which I love. Like that's just something we used over and over again on that trip.
Yeah, we did. And
I was
so
mulling
I
around with
but
it.
I remember that you well so because you wanted to get a shot of it at night. Because they
Oh,
had like
that's
changed
right.
it to like a yellow light or something like that.
Yep.
And so you brought it down to where we were having beers next to the river. And I filmed you saying whatever you're saying about it. And then you hung out. And then you had like this 12-foot light pole. And it was really dark. Like if I were you, I would have used the light pole too. And but you also had this sock hat on because it was cold that night. And
Yeah.
it just came up in this perfect cone, and you just with the staff. I mean, I wanted to turn around and go like, "You shall not pass," or something. It was pretty
Because
good.
I think when I come and sat down with you guys, it was still light. but I had the Light Ranger with me. So when I went back to my tent, I hadn't brought my flashlight with me. So it's just, it was a way of lighting the way through, kind of like I was walking through the mines.
I am so glad that we recorded that moment. I still pull that up and watch it sometimes.
Yeah, that was a cold night too. I'm surprised because that, like, the whole trip up until that stage had been really, really hot. Like every
single day. Well, we had one cold night on Magruder. The first night on Magruder.
Oh, you're right. Cold. Yeah.
But that was it. And then it was hot.
Everything else had been super hot.
Yeah.
I guess it had cooled down a little bit at night, the other nights. But that was the first night. It was like, I know the Magruder was cold. I remember putting my big jacket on there.
Yeah. I layered up in the Magruder. I will say this also. It just occurred to me. I don't know why it just occurred to me, but that was also our last night on the trail.
Last night on the trail or last night with all three of us?
No, on the trail. We didn't stay on the trail again.
Oh, you didn't?
No. So, like, it was actually a great ending, and I'm glad I filmed it or edited it the way I did because it was kind of like there's a shot of us like cheersing each other, and it was this great kind of evening vibe that we had that night. And now that I think about it, we didn't
have... It's like a bunch of elves in Rivendell.
We didn't have another night like that. We didn't. That was it. That was the last one. So because the next day, we got up, and I don't know where we were trying to get to. I can't remember what our destination was.
You were super into getting into... what's the name of the town there? Warren?
Wallace.
But yep, I wanted to get to Wallace to see stuff. I didn't want to just get to Wallace. Like, I thought we would, like, pass through Wallace and keep going. But as it turned out, a series of unfortunate events. We are driving from Avery to Wallace, which is only about, I don't know, what is it, like 25 miles or something?
It's not far.
It's not far at all. But it's one of the most beautiful drives of the whole trip.
Because
you get to drive through these tunnels, and the forests are so thick, and there's these like kind of marshy meadows in between.
Yeah. Technically, the backcountry discovery route doesn't actually go through the tunnels or over those trestles. The official route actually follows the river. But
Does it really?
Yeah. Hmm. But I think I was leading the way, and since I knew those were way cooler, we went that way instead. But it basically followed, like, it's very similar route, except you're like way up here going over bridges and through tunnels, which is much cooler than just driving along the river.
100%.
Yeah. It was beautiful.
I'm so glad you did that. I didn't know. I thought we were actually on the route. No, that's...
Yeah. So if anyone's listening and they're considering doing that, forget the route. Go across the tunnel. Well, not across the tunnels. Across the bridges.
Yeah.
Yeah. Was this also the section where there was the fawn in front of us?
Yes. No, well, no, that was coming into Avery.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that was coming into Avery the night before. There was this little teeny tiny fawn, looked very, very new. And, you know, I felt it was a moment, a thing that happened. So I showed it. I think you showed it too in the video. But I felt really bad for that poor little animal. And we were giving it, for the record, a lot of space. We were trying to kind of get it off the trail. And the poor thing didn't know what to do. So it would kind of run down the trail and then it would stop.
And stop.
Yeah. Because we stopped multiple times. And I didn't include this in my video because obviously stopping, waiting is boring to put on video. So I got some hateful comments about it. Like, well, why didn't you just stop and let it go? We did. We stopped. I want to say we stopped three times. And every time we stopped, we'd just sit there in the trail for, you know, a minute. And this one just stared at us. Every time,
or it would run to the side of the road, right? And we would come up close to it, and then it would run back into the middle of the road.
Yeah,
like it clearly was just totally lost and frustrated. And you know, I hope it found its family. There's a good chance that it became a dinner for a coyote, but
natural selection,
unfortunately.
Yeah,
however,
you're too dumb, you didn't make it.
Get off the road.
That's the British sensibility we know and love.
I have to be careful. I published a video about hunting wolves, and it did not go well.
You didn't even like see a wolf.
We're on the next day. We're driving to Avery, and definitely take the high road. Take the bridges road through the tunnels. Wow, that was so so you just don't get to do stuff like that in the normal world.
No,
like, that was so fun.
That's actually another spot I want to go back to, because that, so we left the railroad, like, that is not a railroad anymore, but we left that at the point where it's no longer a public road. It turns into a cycle path and continues for like another 20 miles or something, and continues going through tunnels. So I want to go back, and I'm too lazy for a normal bicycle, so I need to get an e-bike. I would do that.
I would love that. We get to this place. It's called like the Half Moon Pass or something.
I don't know what it's called, but I do remember it. Like, you go up over the top and you can look down along the valley.
Yeah.
You it's guys, when you made it over the top, you could see me like way off in the distance ahead.
Yeah. And that's when my drive shaft really went kaput. So we're coming into Wallace, and it's like vibrating the floor. It's so bad. So I start going a little bit slower, hanging back, and you guys get into basically Wallace, maybe 2 miles out from Wallace, which is where this hiking trail is up to the Pulaski cave. And I pull in, and I feel like it's like one of those old time movies where it's like you pull in and the car's like clunk, 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 clunk. I'm like, just like, so I got out and we started futzing with it. And I was like, I just can't, you know what? I'm not going to spend all night working on this. We need to go do the Pulaski Trail. And Rob, you had gotten some messages at the time that we weren't sure if you were going to be able to stay with us or not. So you were kind of forecasting that you thought maybe you might have to leave.
Yeah, I think I had made the decision that morning, or I think I talked to you about it that morning before we'd left this little campsite by the river. But there's just a ton of things that are adding up to me not coming with you on the rest of the trip. Like, I know Elizabeth had some issues with her blood pressure earlier. Mm-hmm. And actually, it was while we were at Overland Expo Pacific Northwest, and she'd gone into the hospital. Turns out she'd been fine that stage. I had, you know, a number of factors adding up to me questioning whether it was the right choice to continue. You know, Elizabeth, my wife, was 7.5 months pregnant at the time, I think, maybe even coming up to, I think she was 7.5 months pregnant. And she had some blood pressure issues. So I was thinking, like, maybe I need to start thinking about heading home, to take care of her, make her comfortable, that kind of thing, in case she needs to rest. Also I'd had issues, not really, I guess, with the truck, but, I have an extended warranty on it that requires an oil change within every 10,000 miles, and I was like 9,700, I think. And if I had continued along the trail, I would not have made it back for an oil change within 10,000 miles. So I would have avoided my 125,000 mile warranty, which I didn't want to do either. And then there was something else as well. So it just ended up
the air filter or something, right? Wasn't it like you had to, you're worried about your air filter?
I mean, I knew the air filters in that Tundra were just chocked full, and I had, you couldn't buy them anywhere.
That's right. Maybe you're just looking for them.
I had been looking for them the whole trip. But yeah, like I said, just several things come together to the point where I was like, it's probably not a good idea to finish this trip. And like Chris said, I was tired of you guys at that stage.
fair.
Like, fair these thing. Guys, these alcoholics thing. Keeping me up all night with plying me with bourbon.
So we get to the Pulaski Trail, like the parking lot for the Pulaski Trail, and it was a good departure point because we're on pavement and it was easy to get onto interstate in Wallace.
Right on I-90.
Yeah. And we did, I think we just did like one last data transfer.
Oh yeah,
files. That, yeah. You and I had been swapping files, and we learned a lot about what to do and what not to do when co-filming and swapping
footage. I now put a date on all of my folders because of the mess of us trying to synchronize footage.
For the record, it's much better to just put the date on the folder than put day one, because my day one was not Rob's day one. it was a mess later.
Because my day one was going up to that campsite above Jarbidge, where your day one was leaving from Jarbidge.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So in any case, so you left, and when you left, I don't remember what time it was. It was in the afternoon, maybe 2 o'clock or something like that.
I think we'd just eaten again. I think we ate lunch at the trailhead there, which means it probably was like 1:30, 2 o'clock.
So we're there. My Jeep is broken down, breaking down. You leave.
Yeah, I'm like, see you later.
Yeah, it was a quick goodbye, but that's fine. Like, quick goodbyes are good. So in our minds, it was like, there goes Rob. And now we're about to hike up to this trail. And I want to walk through the trail, and then I want to circle back to what you were actually doing, Rob.
Yeah, I want to hear about this trail too.
Yeah, so the trail is, it's actually really neat. It's a little bit more strenuous than I thought it was going to be. So I think it's 2 miles up and 2 miles back.
Oh, that's the third reason I wanted to leave. I didn't want to have to do any kind of physical exercise. Yeah, I know. You guys have been talking about this trail for days. So I knew you were both excited about it.
Yeah. And so here's me with my little YouTube channel and all my cameras. And I have this camera backpack. And I stuff it full of cameras. Cause I'm like, I'm going to get this. Cause this is so important to me. It's like, I'm going to get this. So we start on the trail, and I'm filming most of it on my phone, cause it's the easiest thing to pull out of your pocket and film. Part of the trail is paved, and then most of it is dirt. So we kind of get through the paved part, we get on the dirt stuff, and it's really beautiful, but it's really, really, almost tropical. It's got a lot of undergrowth, and there's this creek that it runs along. And at times you're walking around the creek, and at times the creek is kind of like down in a ravine from where you are. And so every now and then there's some clearings, cause it's very overgrown with trees as well. There's some clearings where you can get open sky. And in one of these clearings, I'm just thinking like, okay, I need different angles. I need to film this. And so I get out my drone, my mini drone, because it's great. It's small. It can fit in these spaces. And this is like what I got it for. I got it for like hiking. So I get it out, I turn it on, and I'm like, guys, I just want to get some footage of us hiking. This is like not even good footage, Rob. This is like... This is like, you know, dad bods hiking up a trail. Like, no one really wants to see this. So I put the drone up, and I'm kind of flying it, tracking us a little bit. And I'm doing one of these shots that's like the drone is basically like, it's like a side shot. So like we're walking on the trail and the drone is kind of on the side, just kind of tracking us as we go. And I forgot or never knew that the drone, the DJI Mini 3 Pro, has obstacle avoidance, but it does not have side obstacle avoidance. And so it just so happened to be one of these places where we were like the creek was down in a ravine from us. And so I'm getting what I think is a brilliant shot, because I think all my shots are brilliant until I actually see the footage, and I think it's crap. But so I'm getting this shot of us walking, and I'm in this little clearing, and I'm getting close to trees, and I'm thinking like, oh, I can just push this for like another 2 or 3 feet because I have obstacle avoidance. And I hear this.
You rely way too heavily on.
That's just true. It got me in later in the trip too. And I hear this sound. I hear this like, it's the sound of a propeller hitting a leaf or a branch. It's like, and I looked up, and as I looked up just in time to catch it falling. Like, I just barely caught this thing streaking down to the earth. And I thought, oh no. First I was mad. I was mad at DJI because I thought they made a faulty drone. And then I remembered it was my fault. And so I climbed down into this ravine looking for this mini drone. And it was bad. It was like really steep down this hill, crossing the creek, and then really steep on the other side. And it's I can't describe how overgrown it is. I can't like undersell that. And it's like thorns, and just I'm getting cut up. I'm looking everywhere. I spent at least 20 minutes sifting around out there, and I came to my senses, and I realized I wasn't gonna find it. So I climbed back up, and I'm like, okay, I'm fine. You know what? Fine. I lost the drone. fine.
That's what insurance is for.
Gonna
move on.
Exactly. And I was like, okay, I'm just gonna film this section with my phone. So I reached my phone and it had been in a front pocket of my shirt. And it was not there anymore.
Oh,
and it
no.
had clearly fallen out into the underbrush when I was out looking
at some point in that ravine with the underbrush yeah. that's so thick that you'll never yep. find your drone or yes. your phone.
Actually, I think I was getting my phone out to try to do like the SOS or something with it. In any case, it was gone and I didn't accept it at first. So I went back into the ravine. I like climbed back down and looked again and it was just all in vain. And I had lost so $1,000 phone and $1,000, I don't know, $1,200 in drone stuff. And it was just like, it was like the worst moment of the entire trip for me because it was all my own fault. It was super expensive and I had lost all that footage. So all the footage driving from Avery, yeah, the hike, all that stuff was all gone, which is almost as sad as losing like the phone itself. So then I pulled out my big DSLR on my gimbal,
and
which weighs
that.
Like 10 pounds.
Yeah,
I didn't drop it. No, that one is too big for me to lose. So I carried that up. I filmed the rest of it on that. And and the cool thing is when we got up there, it's kind of like the site is kind of the informational site. It's kind of up on like one of these ravines and the cave is a good, like, I don't know, 100 yards down and across the creek. And I was super frustrated that I had lost my phone. I had lost my drone and I wasn't going to be able to actually see the effing cave. Like I wanted to see the cave and I was super frustrated. And then this lady that was a local was there. She was like, well, there's a trail that goes down to the cave if you want to see it. And I was like, is that okay? Are you supposed to do that? She's like, oh yeah, that's totally fine. And that's all I needed. Like, I don't actually know if it was okay or not. I was like, okay, I'm going.
Yeah.
And so I hiked down and I had this really amazing kind of moment down there in this cave, kind of imagining and reliving this thing that happened that kind of, for me, for somebody, and I know you do too, Rob, like loves like the public lands and, you know, what we have here in the States. It's like one of our national treasures. And it kind of, this was a big piece of that puzzle that we have today. This is a big moment for me. Chris came down and had a moment too. And then we hiked back down.
I'm surprised that you were able to enjoy that. And I'm surprised that you were able to make video from that. Cause I can't imagine the frustration and how upset you would have been at losing not just the physical objects like the drone and the phone, because that's awful, but also losing all that footage. And I have never been in a situation that bad while out on the trip. Now, I've had my low points. You know, there have been times where it has not stopped raining and then you drop your sandwich in the puddle and... like that's just the worst thing ever. But you know, on some of these trips, you have a really low point where it's just finally got to you, and it is so difficult to then make video from there to do anything, because that's the last thing you want to do when you're really frustrated or you're really tired. The last thing you want to do is get the camera out and continue producing this documentary, this video that you're doing for YouTube. So I don't know how you did that, how you were able to salvage that, how you turned that around. Maybe it was just because you had Chris and Jake there and they were able to bring you out of that. Because I feel like
I think that helped. Yeah. And I think losing my stuff on the way up, like actually made it more like memorable because I figured it out. But then we came back down, we went into Wallace. We had a great night in Wallace. Wallace is a very cool town. It's a very cool town. If you're going to do sightseeing in Idaho, put Wallace on your list. It's super authentic. The whole town is on the National Historic Registry. And so it really feels like you're someplace different. Like I don't even know how to describe it except for it's super authentic.
I thought it was famous for one particular type of building.
So can it start with B and end with Rothel?
Yeah. Wallace is super interesting because Wallace had legalized prostitution until the 1970s. And the owners of the brothels, these female owners of the brothels were like presidents of the Chamber of Commerce, and like, you know, they weren't kind of an obscure, like, not talked about part of the community. They were like fully integrated into the community. And so it's a really interesting place that's reinvented itself many, many, many times.
Idaho, and they were going to build a bizarre history.
It does. Yeah. And so here's the thing about Wallace. They were going to build an interstate, I-90, right through it. And Wallace was like, how do we stop this? And somebody came up with the idea to declare the whole town a national historic town. And so they did that. And so they can't like change the architecture of the houses in town, but they saved the interstate from coming through. And so when you go to Wallace, the interstate like curves right around Wallace. Is really, really interesting.
Yeah. It's way above it.
Yeah.
It's a really, really interesting town. So definitely go to Wallace. So then we had a good night. We spent the night in a motel in Wallace, a clean motel.
Did you talk about pulling your drive shaft?
I didn't. So yeah, you're right. So we came back down, and this is well documented on the video though. Like, you know, pull my drive shaft. Here's what's not documented though. Before we get to Rob, because I want to get to Rob's story. What's not documented is we were working on pulling this drive shaft, and it's really hard to pull a Rezepa joint because it's Allen bolts that are in a really obscure place on your Jeep that's really hard to get into, and it's just hard for lots of reasons. So Chris was helping me. So I would do a couple turns, then Chris would come in and do a couple turns. And I'm not kidding you. It took forever. And Chris, on the Allen wrench slipped, and the Allen wrench sliced his, was it your thumb, Chris?
No, your it's finger? My left index finger.
And sliced it like it really filleted. Yeah. And so Chris comes out from underneath of the car, and he needs to like sit, he's like put his head down because he's about to faint. Like it's one of those. And so we get out the first aid kit. We wrap it up, and he's looks like he's okay. And he goes back to work under the Jeep with the Allen wrench again. clearly that was a bad idea. It like reopens the wound. It's like gushing blood. We wrap it up again, and I convince him to just sit down.
Yeah. You don't just convince me. You tell me. You're like, just sit down. I'm gonna take care of this. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, yeah, okay, that's cool. Oh, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, I did. I had to like be a little firm. So, yeah. So then, the result of that story is your sister and her husband looked at your finger, like a time afterwards, and they looked at it and they said, "You should have gone to the emergency room, and got stitches. Like this is ridiculous. It was a really bad cut."
Yeah, my sister, she's a PA, a physician assistant, and my brother-in-law is an ER doc, and they both looked at it and they're like, "Yeah, you should have gotten him for stitches."
Yeah, you've got a
so I have a really nice scar and a really great story from it.
Yeah. So, I wish it would have happened on your drive shaft and not mine, but in any case, your finger's fine. So we have a night in Wallace. So while this is all happening, Rob, you're starting this journey back to Kentucky. How long of a drive is it from Idaho to Kentucky?
I don't know. I'd have to Google that one. It's a very long way.
Is it 2 days, 3 days?
30 hours.
Oh, my gosh.
That's
30 hours.
That's a long drive.
And that's with no
2,000 miles. Stops. Yeah, with no stops. 2,000 miles, 30 hours, no stops. I made decent progress the first day. Ended up getting into camp kind of probably around like 11 o'clock at night. Just really nice little campsite by the river somewhere in, North Dakota or something. I don't remember where.
Some state.
Were there presidents overlooking the campsite?
It probably was Montana that I was in, because Montana is a huge state. So I probably was driving till 11 o'clock and was still in Montana. The next night was in Iowa, and that was not a great campsite, because even though it was marked as a campsite on there, it was a state, I think it was a city park, even though it had a campsite marked on their website, the cops came in, not like 5 minutes after I'd pulled in and set up my tent, a cop pulls in, shows up, and is like, "You can't camp here." It's like, "Oh, well, I'll go find a Walmart or something." It's like, "Well, all right, fine, you can stay." And he drove off. So I get up into the tent, and maybe 5 minutes later, this blinding light shines on my tent. It's like, "Sheriff's office." So,
oh my God.
I guess, I don't know if it was like the city police first showed up and then the sheriff's office shows up, and the sheriff's like, you can't camp here. So I go through this whole thing, and this is like midnight. Wow. I was super tired because I'd driven that entire day. And goes through the whole thing, checks my license, checks the truck, and like, you know, runs my license plate, comes back as a gray truck. And yeah, my bright blue truck. Okay. Oh my
God. You're like, "I have a YouTube channel. I have wrapped it blue." Yeah.
Yeah. And like spends 30 minutes going through all this stuff, how I can't camp there. And he's like, "Well, we have an issue with kids coming in here, taking drugs, that kind of thing. If you're camped here, it's actually probably going to put them off. You can stay."
Oh no.
You might be killed by them in the morning, but we'll let you stay.
But so at that stage, I was really tired. So I went to sleep, but, I think the cops continued coming in every now and then. Cars came in every now and then. I did not sleep well that night because of, you know, all of that. And 6 a.m. the next morning, I guess the next shift of the sheriff's or the local city cops shows up. And at that stage, I'm like, "Okay, I'm out of here. You don't have to tell me I can camp here again. I'll leave."
Yeah.
Three.
Yeah. The fourth time they tell you is when you get the message.
Yeah. Yeah. So I ended up leaving.
So you're saying Iowa and Idaho are not, you know, as friendly as one is not as friendly as the other.
No, definitely not. Of the two, I think Idaho is probably the better state to visit. Although the locals would not tell you that, or half of them wouldn't, based on the comments on my video.
That's true.
Because
I'm sure Iowans are pretty great too. To be honest,
Idahoans would much prefer you go to Iowa.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. The local Idahoans do not want you going there. That's true. So I leave, and at this point, like, I am really tired. You know, it's two solid days of driving, not a good night's sleep. And I get a phone call from Elizabeth, and her blood pressure has spiked again, to the point where she had a little home blood pressure cuff. If that was accurate, then she was probably pretty close to having a stroke. Because her blood pressure was so high. So she was trying to get a hold of her mom to come take her to the hospital, have her checked out, and end up getting a call back a couple hours later when she'd made it to the hospital. And turns out that her blood pressure was so high that she'd been put on meds and she was going to have an emergency C-section within an hour.
Oh my God. So when you decided to drive back to Kentucky, you didn't know that there was a possibility for like emergency C-section. Like you were like, "It's time to come home. Elizabeth needs me. I'm going to go home." And it wasn't until later on your way home that you found out that there was a little bit of an emergency situation.
Right. So she was still 6 weeks away from her due date. And we had talked about this, and basically we had said, "I need to be home within about 4 to 5 weeks of her due date, just in case." You know, this stage is 6 weeks, but she'd been a little unwell. So, you know, that was one of the factors that I was considering when leaving. Never thought this would happen.
Yeah.
That early. Never thought it would come 6 weeks early. So I got home. You know, I drove at that stage. It was like, "Okay, not stopping.
Yeah.
Just going to go all out, get home," and ended up getting home. So I did miss the birth. You know, emergency C-section, they're not going to hold. They're not going to wait for me to get back there. Because her life was at risk. His life was at risk at that stage. But I got there right as they were getting ready to take her down to see him for the first time.
Oh, so man,
I got to be there for that.
Price thinks that you couldn't get there in time. However, like, that's still pretty dang good, I have to say.
Yeah. So thankfully, my mother-in-law was able to make it there. And honestly, she's probably better at comforting Elizabeth anyway during that. And she took, I'd say, like at least 800 pictures of this little swamp monster coming out. Little gray, I'm thinking like little Harry Potter monster coming out. So I don't know if I would have enjoyed that part of it anyway. And like I say, mother-in-law is probably better at comforting Elizabeth. Yeah. Anyway. So
yeah,
I feel like that worked out.
What a crazy trip. I mean, like here you are on some backcountry discovery route with a couple of bourbon drinking yahoos. And then you decide it's probably time to go back to Kentucky. Like it's getting close. You need to be there. So you leave, and then on your way, you get harassed by the sheriff and the police. And then, like, the next day is like, oh, and by the way, your wife's life is in danger and your unborn child's life is in danger. So we're going into an emergency procedures, and you're like helpless. Like you can only drive so fast.
Just
and so
a few hours away. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
I was passing Chicago when I got the phone call. And that stage I stopped and well, I didn't stop. Yes, I stopped because I was using my phone. I stopped and looked at some flights. Like, well, I can get home quicker. Chicago's 5-6 hours away from home. And I could get a flight, take 2 hours. But at that stage, I'd still be missing the birth.
Yeah, right.
By the time you check into an airport, you're looking like 3-4 hours.
Yeah, and then you got to go back and get your truck at some point.
Get a taxi. So just ended up driving. Yeah.
I'm sure your truck would have been perfectly safe in Chicago. Like nobody would have messed with it in Chicago.
Sure.
I'm a big blue truck with a bunch of stuff attached to it. Yeah,
and a well-known safe city.
Yeah,
yeah, very safe.
So got home and I was
there. I can't help but feel that it's like partly the Iowan police officer's fault that you weren't there.
Definitely.
So I feel like you could blame it on them.
Yeah.
Thank you for your service, guys. That's fair.
While that was happening, I was feeling sorry for myself about losing my drone. I mean, that kind of puts that in perspective.
Yeah, I promise you, your drone cost a lot less than what I had to pay for.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. So
I don't want to take away from that. That was
No. You can't because it is like one is not the other. So we're in Wallace, we're having a good night. I'm trying to forget about all the dumb mistakes I'd made. And then the next day, I think this was a group decision, but this could have been one of those moments where like I expressed something to the group and they just said yes. Like I'm not quite sure, but I think we were all aligned that we were just going to finish the BDR in one day. Like just do two sections in one day.
It was pretty early. Yeah, we got some gas station like breakfast burritos or something and fueled up and we just hit the trail. We just cannonballed it out of there. And no, you weren't the only one that decided that. It was because Jake hadn't been on the trail as long. He probably would have been okay if we would have taken a little bit longer. You and I, we were kind of at that point ready to roll, ready to get home.
It had been a long trip up to that stage. It had been, obviously the whole thing's very enjoyable, but once you've driven so far, you've seen the same scenery. Well, I changed a little bit, relatively similar scenery the whole way. You've got that goal.
There is a moment where you just want it to be over.
And one pass, mountain pass looks like another one.
And it doesn't diminish the trip. And they were all different, but like at some point finishing it became the goal. Like it was the goal, which was like, we're going to finish it. It wasn't like, let's see how beautiful it is between Wallace and the Canadian border. It was like, we're finishing this damn trip. And we're doing it tomorrow, come hell or high water, because we're going to finish it. So we took off early in the morning and it was still beautiful. I mean, it was gorgeous. The mountains outside of Wallace are incredible. It's like Wallace. The next stop is basically Clark Fork, which is on the edge of the Pend'Oreille Lake. The mountains between them were great. About halfway into those mountains, I crashed my other drone, which does have sensors all around it. And I think I was just flying it fast, and it was a burned tree, and I think that it was just so small of a, I think the radar just didn't quite catch it, and it just, I mean, it hit it at 40 miles an hour at 30 or 40 feet in the air. Luckily,
so you must have been in sport mode then.
No, well, okay, no. Maybe it's 25 miles an hour. No, it was.
Or maybe you were in sport mode.
I was definitely in. I'm like 90% sure that it was not in sport mode. However, I have done that before, so I'm not infallible. But luckily, it was kind of like undergrowth. It was like this like lush kind of undergrowth, and so the drone came down and had a relatively soft landing. It broke the propellers, but it didn't break the core of the drone. And I always bring spare propellers because I'm a terrible drone pilot. Well, so, but I brought the wrong size. I had accidentally brought my other propellers from my old drone, not the new drone. And so, but I had experienced enough disappointment in the trip from the previous day to like quickly get over this one. And then I was like, well, this is okay. This is cool. So I'm going to film the rest of this trip with my DSLR, with my handheld camera on my gimbal. And I have these things that I can attach to it that I can, you know, get it high in the air or really low to the ground. And so I was like, well, this will be a really interesting challenge. And the cool thing is that I feel like we still captured the last part of the trail pretty well without a drone. I mean, Brad at Trail Recon never uses a drone.
Yeah, he never uses one.
And his videos are awesome. This is what I was telling myself. Like, you can do this, Will. Like, you don't need a drone. I mean, drones are almost like a cheat code, you know. So we did it, and I was really, really, really happy with it. We push. We got really tired at Clark Fork. And then we pushed hard to the next phase. And I'll tell you, I don't know, Chris, you tell me what you think, but like these guys who did the BDR route, it's like they keep pump faking.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, you're on pavement now. You're done. So like we aired up our tires. And then it was like, nope, just kidding. You're back on dirt for another 8 miles.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that I really do love about the BDR is those guys really do try and squeeze every less ounce of like dirt out of it. And so there were times when the ultimate goal was to get to Port Hill, Idaho. And I popped it into my GPS and it would say like Port Hill, Idaho, 30 miles. And so we're following the BDR. So we're not taking the route that the GPS has plotted. And it'll say like 30 miles, 40 miles, 50 miles. And I'm like, what?
Yeah, farther away.
You know, but at the same time, we were driving through like this section of Idaho that just, it's another one that I'll talk to people that, you know, they pride themselves on traveling all over Idaho. And I'm like, did you know there's hop fields up in on the Canadian border? And they're like, what? It's like, yeah, there's like huge hop fields up there. And
hop fields, yep.
Yeah. Fields. Yeah, like, for beer.
For brewing beer.
Yeah. Oh, so, okay. But yeah, there's like massive ones there. And I think, and Will, you probably remember better than I do, but I think they were like all Budweiser or something, but just like these massive hop fields. Yeah. And they got these, if you've never seen a hop field, you need to look up a picture of them because they're kind of like a vineyard, but instead of using like these little tiny
on steroids,
like, you know, little posts. It's like telephone poles that they use. They're massive.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
They're huge. Yeah. And so you're just kind of driving through it and it's just so green and lush. And the mornings are still cold, even though it's like late July. And you kind of get the feeling that it never really gets like hot there, you know?
Yeah, you're so far north. I don't want to undersell North
Idaho. Oh, it's beautiful.
Like, we zoomed through North Idaho, but North Idaho is worth going back
to explore. Yeah, it's worth its own trip.
It is gorgeous up there. So we push all day long, and it's getting late now. The sun's starting to set. It's this really great vanilla sky, and we reach Port Hill. And I don't want to go into this too much, because I think we actually captured it in the video really, really well. In fact, you know, YouTube has this whole thing where they show you your retention stats, and I knew that I wasn't going to have great retention during this part because it's just me and you decompressing on camera. But it was like important to me to finish the story because that's kind of, it was like you're seeing us decompress, which was the end of this route. And so I think we captured that pretty well on camera, but we get to Port Hill. It's a little underwhelming. you know, the actual place. It's not, you want like to be like some kind of like big, like fireworks going up.
I should have brought fireworks.
Made it, yay! And it's like, yeah, right. And it's like this, you know, this little kind of dumpy building. And so we finished the BDR and then we need a place to stay. There's no place to stay there. And so we think, okay, well, let's just start driving south, on the pavement, on the highway. And we drive. And at some point, I can't remember. I think Jake made reservations for us.
Jake took good care of us.
A long way.
It's a long way from Portsmouth. Very long way. And so I'm not kidding you. I think we pulled into Coeur d'Alene at midnight. Like we stopped in Bonner's Ferry or someplace to get dinner.
A great dinner too.
And then it was.
Yeah, it's a cool location
it's just,
too.
It's just such a beautiful area.
Bonner's Ferry is really, really cool. Yeah.
And the train is too.
We drove into, I think it was either Bonner's Ferry or Sandpoint.
It's kind of a blur, to be honest, because we were like running on adrenaline and Red Bulls at that point.
Red Bulls at this point. My adrenaline's gone. Like it's the letdown. Yeah, so I'm just barely staying awake. We get to Coeur d'Alene. We get to the hotel area. And I'm not kidding you. We just drove 1,400 miles off-road using Gaia GPS to navigate these back roads. I mean, we're not dumb people. We could not figure out how to get into the... Okay. Rob's debating that.
Follow a line on a map. We're not dumb people. We can follow a line.
That's fair. However, it seems like we should have been able to find our way into the hotel.
It was not intuitive.
And it took us like 20 minutes to get into this stupid hotel parking lot. It's 12:30 a.m. or so when we check in. But we had finished the BDR. So I was like, guys, come into my room. I've got this last little bit of really nice whiskey. Let's just have a toast. And I remember the guys came into the room. We had a toast and I was fully on fumes. And I was like, at one point I was like, you guys have to leave my room now. Please leave. I can't keep my eyes open. And we crashed. And then we left at 6:30 the next morning. And we drove all the way back to Boise. And because our families were like, you need to come home. Like we're done with this whole thing.
You've been without them for a while. That stage.
13 days. It was a 13 day
trip. Well, they've been without you.
Yeah.
You probably still got home before me.
I think we did. Yeah. Cause we were two nights, right? Were you two nights or three nights?
I was two nights.
Yeah. So probably about the same time.
We were Wallace, I think we probably got home the same time. Yeah.
Yeah.
To very different circumstances.
Yeah.
But the good news is for us, we finished the BDR. We have this really great documentation of, you know, beginning to end.
Check.
And it was a great trip. For you though, Rob, you like everything turned out great. Like your kid came 6 weeks early, and I know it wasn't it wasn't like the next day everything was okay, but like you've since taken him on overlanding trips to Colorado, and I mean things seem like they're going well.
Yeah, taking him on several trips. No, only one of them's been videoed, but he's been on several trips with us. He's a well-traveled child now, and he wouldn't know looking at him that he was 6 weeks early. You know, one of the things that people have always said is that, or doctors always said, is that, you know, you got to expect him to be 6 months delayed in all his milestones. And maybe early on he was, but now he's fully caught up, and he's actually now for like his size, he was 97th percentile for his size.
Yeah,
wow.
He's a big boy. We're not exactly a short guy there, Rob.
So. Yeah,
that's great, man. I mean, that's so good to hear.
He's so I'm looking forward to bringing him on some family trips, and I think we're all ready to do some more trips as well, aren't we?
Yeah. So how I would love to end this conversation with the two of you is. We did this Idaho BDR, which is the longest BDR that's out there. For us, it was 1,400 miles from beginning to end because we did some side trips. For Rob, it was add another, I don't know, 2,000 miles or something with this trek back to Kentucky. But like, you know, I think we did this trip reasonably well, but I know that we can do the next one better, whatever the next one might be. So I think like we just have to put our heads together and figure out what that one is. We were talking about Wyoming, Nevada. Chris and I are planning this route that goes from eastern to western Oregon and ends hopefully on the beach or close to the beach.
Yeah.
So And I know you're going to be west for a bit this early summer, right?
Yeah, on and off. I think we figured out it's actually cheaper to leave the tundra out west and fly out to it, and easier as well. You know, with a baby, the overlanding part of it, like the going out and camping, is not difficult with a baby. Mm-hmm. Getting there is difficult mm-hmm. with a baby. Yeah. Yeah. It's the highway stuff. Like, we can only drive about half the time on the highway. But if you're on an overlanding trip, that's part of the journey. You know, if you stop for 2 hours to look around, enjoy, stretch your legs, feed him, that's all fun. But when you're trying to get somewhere on the highway, yeah. it's not. So, yeah, gonna be west. You know, I love Oregon. Has been a fantastic state to visit. I love that state. Wyoming, I feel like there is a corner that is mm-hmm. really, really cool, and then there's like maybe a couple other spots, and then the rest of the yeah. state is super boring.
I so agree with you, man. I have driven through Wyoming too many times, like from yeah. west to east and east to west, and it has been awful there. But yeah. there are some. I would like to see those pretty parts.
There are some pretty parts. Yeah. For me, the one I really want to do, and I know I've talked to you guys about this, I really want to do Nevada for two reasons. One of them is I have never, I've never done anything in Nevada before other than just drive through and I guess visit, you know, like a couple of touristy spots. So I've never done any kind of overland stuff in Nevada. The other reason is that it either starts or ends.
Yeah, there's kind of a poetic, yeah, it's like a poetic justice to that, starting in Jarbidge and then, yeah, or ending in Jarbidge for that matter.
Yeah.
Either. Jace will be there waiting for us.
We got to get to that prime rib.
Yes. I think ending in Jarbidge would be the way to do it for a couple of reasons. One is we can start in the south, where it's going to be hottest, and work our way north and hopefully the weather cooperate. And then the other reason is I think ending with a nice meal in Jarbidge would just
yeah,
be
you know that
rather great. Than ending in Vegas. He wants to end in Vegas.
You know, I would put Jason's prime rib up against anything you'd find in Vegas.
Yeah.
I would too. Yeah. And you know, and just the experience. So we just did it. Like, I don't know what it was like 4 yeah. weeks ago, Chris. We finally did it. And so it's definitely worth going back for. And I gotta say, it's fun to know the guy that owns the saloon. Know him, meaning like we're friendly. We're not super close, yeah. but like, you know, he's been really nice to us, and I think he's appreciated the videos that we make, and you know how we do our best to showcase Jarbidge as a cool place. So I think that would be really cool. We just gotta figure it out. You know, the hardest part about these trips, doing them together, is just timing. Everybody's got crazy schedules, and but I think. Now, like, we should figure out, the three of us, how we do another trip together, either a BDR or something else, because I think the next one we can do even better than the Idaho BDR, which was, in my mind, mm-hmm. really cool.
Yeah, it was a fun trip, and especially from like a video standpoint, I think it came out really well. Like, that's been a really successful video for me, and that is what I aim for in a video. I want videos like that, especially like just the radio chatter, like including this kind of thing. Like, I really think adds to it. So I want more like that.
I'll tell you, that's another thing that I learned from you is you brought this device that records the radio chatter. And as a filmmaker, I don't know if that's the right word for me, as a video maker, as a YouTube person, wow, it was so cool. It took a ton of time to listen to every single.
So much work.
It was like, I'm putting the drone up. I'm putting the drone down. I'm putting the drone up. I'm putting the drone down. Are you ready? Are you ready? Are you ready? But like, we got there's so much good stuff that happens on that radio. And so like, then I went and I got my own, and now it's become kind of a signature of the videos that I make, is including that radio chatter. And it's like, if you get the right people on the radio, just kind of, if you can kind of get them going, there's just really good stuff that happens on the radio. So I think listening to that to me was really fun, because it's an authentic way to understand what's happening in the rigs while you're driving.
I think so too. Cause when you point a camera at someone, they know it's there. They are, they may not be acting, but they are talking to a camera. Yeah. Whereas the stuff that's going on the radio, like, yeah, we all know the radio was there, because, you know, I mentioned it right at the start. I was the one that set it up, so I knew it was there. But when you're just having a conversation, you're not thinking about, like, oh, I'm going to say this because I know it's on camera, or I know it's going to be recorded. Like, you're just having a conversation.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, Chris's signature phrase was, yeah, definitely. You know, as I was editing the video, I just had a couple, like, yeah, definitely's from Chris that I just put to the side and saved. I would just throw in every now and then.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah,
definitely. That's definitely your definitely.
Yeah.
Anyway, well, this has been super fun. I really, really appreciate going all the way through to the end, from the Salmon River to Portsmouth and back to Kentucky for the birth of your child. This has been a ton of fun. I hope all of you who are listening found this really enjoyable as well. Hopefully you got some insights into our trip and maybe some tips on what you might do differently or do the same when you're planning a trip like this. And so I just want to say thanks to Rob. Thanks to Chris. Thanks to you for listening, and we will see you next time.